This is a desktop movie. Hey, Nick, I had a question.
Yeah, what's up, Brandon?
Have you ever noticed how our podcast title also could be a fart joke?
No.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that.
It just hit me.
Yeah, I thought about it about the half ago. I was walking somewhere and I was like, it's 2D or not 2D. And I just been sitting on it. Waiting to record, and
like one does with the toot.
Yes.
Sometimes you just gotta sit on it.
Sometimes you do. I just wanted to check and see how you felt about that. If that's okay.
Like with the joke, or that's our name? Because I think it's too late to change the name.
I mean, yeah, I think it is too. I mean, there's rebranding methods. I'm totally fine with it. I just wanted to make certain, you know. It's like when you hear the actual words to a song and you're like kind of bummed, you know, like you're like, oh, that's what they say. And it's like you could make the decision to just keep saying the incorrect one. Like I just wanted to make certain that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. That's okay. I'm okay with that. Because, okay. I mean, it's still a legitimate question. Like, are you 2D or not 2D?
Okay, good, good.
Brandon.
Yes.
What the heck are we doing here?
Talking about FOTS. No, it's 2D or not 2D. It's an animated movie podcast where we watch animated movies and then talk about them and discuss, you know, their two-dimensional qualities, sometimes their three-dimensional qualities, and if they're bad, we talk about their one-dimensional qualities. I'm Brandon.
Are you sure, though? Because we didn't do it last month.
That is true. We did not, which we apologize for. We got very busy, and also we could not find the full-length film, Sky Blue.
Yes. It was a mystery.
It was very strange and frustrating, and did you end up watching what was available?
So, no, because it like, the link you sent me would never load.
Oh, great. Yeah, I don't know what... I thought I had found it, and it was like, here's the hour and whatever long it is, and for me, it would load, but it would say that it was an hour plus long, and then at 40 minutes, it would reach the end of the buffering bar and be done. And if this sounds like we were on a nefarious website, I don't believe we were. This was like Internet Archive, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. Doesn't matter. Otherwise, it's not available anywhere on the internet that I could find that wasn't super sketchy and weird, so... apologize, Nick.
I'm sorry, audience. I'm sorry, Brandon. I'm sorry, makers of this movie.
I apologize as well. This is it's a bummer for that. And unfortunately, actually, a similar thing happened on another show that I do, the Okie Show, with my partner Donna, for the month of August. Yeah, it was just kind of like back to back where like. There was a movie available, and we kind of talked about it on the Okie Show, but it's a bummer when movies, like, I don't know, like, I can't put my brain
when around. They just disappear, HBO Max.
Yeah, well, not only when they just disappear, but it's like, I so wish that there was a thing where, like, production companies could have a website where it's like, if you desperately wanted to, you could pay whatever they were wanting to offer, you know, for their films. And or TV shows, right. In HBO Max's case, and I think
like it's very odd that like there's certain movies that you just like you can't pay to watch them. Like it's why are they unavailable? I don't understand.
Yeah, this is it's the NHL hockey debacle of our lives, the 2017 NHL hockey debacle where we were unable to watch the one team we wanted to watch and. I'm just, my heart's broken all over again, which is not an unfamiliar feeling as a Calgary Flames fan. but alas, that's okay because we're back for August with a new new movie. What do we watch?
Not a new movie.
It's new.
We actually threw it back a little bit.
A little bit. Back to what is it, 82?
To 1982, because we watched The Last Unicorn.
The Last Unicorn. This was a Bass Rankin production. Jules Bass and, or maybe Bass.
Arthur Rankin Jr.
Yeah, they're responsible for a lot of those little Christmas flicks that happens on like ABC and stuff, like, you know, Rudolph and stuff. Remember those?
The classic.
Little claymation doodads. They also did like The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings animated movies from forever ago. Frosty the Snowman, etc. So,
And more.
So this was, 82. It's based off the novel of the same name by Peter S. Beagle. And,
who also wrote the screenplay.
Yes.
Which you don't always see with novel to movie adaptions. Usually someone comes in and is like, I'm going to make this a screenplay, and they ruin it. So kudos to Mr. Beagle.
Yeah, I'm actually going to talk. I'm going to talk a little bit later about him as well. But
cool.
Let's get into it. We are going to spoil this movie. It is spoilable. So, you know, as all straightforward plots, I feel like are, I guess. So if you haven't seen it or you want to check it out before we talk about it, do that. But otherwise, do you wanna start in on this plot? It's a little strange, but
it's a little strange, but also I feel like it's pretty simple at the same time.
Yeah.
So we meet a unicorn in a forest. This unicorn meets butterfly. She meets like hunters that are trying to hunt, but like you can't hunt in a magical unicorn forest.
Obviously.
So they're like, oh, yeah, obviously. Everyone knows that. Come on. So they're leaving, and they're like, stay here, unicorn, because you are the last one. And she's like, what the heck? There's no way I'm the last unicorn. That's stupid. So then she meets a butterfly who sings a lot, can't keep a train of thought. He'll say something, and then he'll start singing, and she's like, hey, have you seen any other unicorns? Am I the last one? Hey, and he's just like, doo-da-da-da-da, scat-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah. Scatting out some riddles and non-sequiturs in her direction.
Yeah, and he eventually kind of alludes to all of the unicorns were chased away by the Red Bull of King, was it Hannigan or Harrigan? Haggard. I don't know where I got again from. by King Haggard's Red Bull. So she's like, well, shoot, what do I do? If I leave, then the forest won't be magical anymore, and all the animals that rely on me to keep them safe will be exposed. But my friends, my unicorns, might be in danger, and they might be waiting for me, so I must go. So she decides to set on an adventure to find all the other unicorns in this mysterious Red Bull. Not the energy drink. This is not sponsored.
Not the corporate entity Red Bull. So her adventure begins and is quickly disrupted by the fact that humans are unable to see unicorns, so they just kind of think she's a real pretty horse. And she is somewhat hassled by a human before then being kidnapped by a witch?
Yeah.
Mommy
Fortuna.
Yes. Captured, who's able to see through the fact that she is not just a horse, but is a unicorn. And captured, and Mommy is a kind of a master illusionist, so makes people see what they want to see. So in her little circus, she has a chimera, which is actually just a big lion, and then also has a what was the snake? Like a giant snake, but then it was just a snake. Oh, a dragon.
Yeah, the snake was a dragon.
However, in this, both the unicorn and the harpy are real.
Oh, yeah. I was like, there was also a harpy.
Yes. Those two are actually what it says on the box. They are, in fact, real, genuine harpy unicorn. Also with the mommy witch is a wizard, a magician, pardon me, not a true wizard, named Schmindrick. The characters in this movie felt very much like I was naming NPCs in a Dungeons & Dragons game.
It was. When he said, my name's Schmindrick, I'm like, is that just a cover? Like, is he going to have a real name later? And nope. His name is Schmindrick.
He is the great and wonderful Schmindrick. He can see that she is a unicorn and then advances to save her and get her free from this carnival. In doing so, has to also set free all of the, like, other creatures, and including the harpy, who seems to kill mommy.
Sorry, Fortuna. Real quick.
Yes.
It's Schmendrick only frees the unicorn. The unicorn frees everybody else,
right,
including the harpy, even though Schmendrick's like, she'll kill you if you let her go. And she's like, I can't do that. We're both magic creatures. So
so then Schmendrick and the unicorn, who has a name later on.
But in the beginning, she's just referred to as Unicorn.
Okay. That was something I don't know if I like missed, if like where that name came from, if it was, I mean,
it's a fake name given to her later, basically.
Okay. Schmindrick and the Unicorn team up. They are joined, by a cook, a woman who cooks. What was her name?
Molly.
That's right. Molly joins up with them. And they make their way to King Haggard's lair through a series of challenges and struggles. And once there, before they actually get there, right outside of it, they are attacked by the Red Bull. And in order to protect the unicorn from the Red Bull, I feel ridiculous saying the name of a product. but that is what they refer to it as. Schmindrick channels what magic he has and turns the unicorn into a human woman. And because of that, the Red Bull cannot see her any longer.
With that, she is distraught because she is no longer in an immortal body. She feels regret and sorrow and all of these sad feelings that unicorns don't feel. So she's very upset. Molly is upset that Schmendrick changed her into a human because she said, you know, she'll go mad being in a human's body. She'll forget that she's a unicorn. She'll go mad. Like, being in this body is nothing but sorrow for her. So they're all very upset. But Schmendrick's like, hey, but she's not getting eaten by the Red Bull. So I did what I had to do. But it's the only way we're going to get into this castle is if she's human. So I'm sorry, but we got to do this. We'll turn you back later. It'll be okay. So they meet the guards at the front of the castle. And they're like, what the heck are you guys doing? And Schmendrick introduces the unicorn as Lady Amalthea, which is just a made up name. He says, this is my niece and my assistant, Molly. We want an audience with King Haggard. So they're like, well, what do you want an audience about? Well, I want to talk to King Haggard directly. So the guards, in quotation marks, take them to the throne room. And it's kind of like a dingy, dungy castle that's like really dark and a little decrepit. And there's like no one there. And the throne room kind of looks more like a dungeon. And they're like, hey, this is a big piece of crap. And one of the guards takes off his helmets and he's like, I'm King Haggard. This is my throne. What do you want with me? And they're like, oh, okay. So the other guard is Prince Lear, which is King Haggard's adopted son. And Schmendrick just is like, hey, we want jobs. Like, I'm a magician. Molly's a cook. We want to work here. And then, you know, she's noble, so she should just, you know, get to stay here, I guess. I didn't really quite understand the reasoning that she got to stay there, but she's really pretty, so it'll pass. King Haggard is really intrigued by her because she just keeps staring at the sea, and he wants her to look at him, and her eyes don't reflect. Like, when he looks into her eyes, he sees the forest that she came from, which is really weird. So he's fascinated by her. So he's like, okay, you guys can all stay and come and go as you please. Whatever. I don't care. Just don't try to look for my secrets or something kind of vague like that. He's like, my secrets are well hidden. I hope you can hide yours just as well, or something like that.
that classic thing that somebody who is super not evil does, where they're like, yeah, you can hang out here, but like, don't poke around too much.
Like, don't go to here. It's forbidden.
It's fine. Don't worry about it. Don't venture into the basement. What? Nothing. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
From there, they spend quite a bit of time there. It seems like weeks pass, and King Lear, or Prince Lear, is falling in love with the last unicorn. What was her name? Lady Amalfa.
Amalthea. These names.
Falling in love with her, and just can't quite find the right words. Meanwhile, Lady Amalthea is just kind of staring out at the sea and really having a hard time, you know, being human.
And super freaking sad.
Yeah. And eventually, the other two, Schmendrick and Molly, they are able to kind of piece together where the rest of the unicorns might actually be here in the castle. They are having a hard time, like, actually getting to where that is. So it's a riddle. So Prince Lear writes a lovely song to Lady Amalthea.
Which, if I can just say real quick, Prince Lear is voiced by Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
And he sings a love song in a cartoon. And I recently watched a movie with him where he was like a week from retirement sheriff guy. So to like see him be a prince singing love songs to a unicorn, it was quite a trip.
Yeah, he's got a good voice on him. And speaking of, this movie is like star-studded. Like, it's pretty bananas. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, Jeff Bridges.
Angela Lansbury.
Yeah.
Is Mama Fortuna.
Mia Farrow is the unicorn. Christopher Lee is King Haggard. Yeah, just it's all over the place here with that.
Yeah.
Great gets. Eventually, they learn how to access the last unicorns, the rest of them. There's a fight in the basement after the riddle is solved.
Oh, wait. Hold on. You skipped the part where... So King Haggard comes to Lady Amalthea and is okay. Like... I know what you are. I know you're a unicorn. And guess what? I have all the unicorns. I put them in the ocean because the only time I'm happy is when I see unicorns. So I put them in the ocean so I could stare at them all I want. And I just really just thought that was very like, I don't know, just like Dr. Evil, like one of those really ridiculous, like, I'm going to put all the unicorns in the ocean. Like, yeah. It's very silly.
And yeah, that is actually, it was one of my like favorite like story elements of it though. It reminded me a lot of like a lot of like Japanese folklore in the sense that like, I feel like a lot of the times with like Western like mythos and stuff, things have to like make sense. And
yeah.
So I just love the idea of being like, oh, the white caps of the waves, that's the unicorns. And like, that just kind of filled my heart with like childlike wonder. Like, oh,
yeah, that's where the thinking unicorn. Of them that way.
Yeah. That is when they discover the location in the subterranean levels of the castle as to where the unicorns are. And there's a battle down there after they solve the riddle. And they have to walk through a clock. And then they come face to face with the Red Bull. And there's a big heated discussion as to whether or not, you know, Lady Amalthea should stay human or go back to being a unicorn. Ultimately... goes back to being a unicorn, drives the, through discovering her inner bravery, drives the Red Bull into the ocean, returning all the hundreds of thousands of unicorns out of the ocean.
Saves very amazing animation.
It was very cool. It was very, very beautiful. Saves Prince Lear and retains her ability to love and have regret. And that kind of makes her a special unicorn. Everybody parts ways and... That was about it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was about it. Prince Lear did like kind of sacrifice himself for the unicorn. And in turn, once she got the Red Bull into the sea, she like revived him with the magic of her unicornness because she does love him, even though she's still a unicorn.
What did you think of this movie?
This is one of the movies that I had very mixed feelings on because a lot of it was really great and then a lot of it was just really weird. And like same with the animation. Like a lot of the animation was really good, but like I mean just Google a picture of Schmendrick the magician. Like that's not a well animated character.
Oh really? Yeah. I actually really, really I thought it was endearing. Like I thought we were gonna be getting into another like Scamper the Penguin territory. Like, that's what I was expecting. So maybe I had, I was not like ready for it to hit me the way it did.
Well, this movie has like a cult following. Like, people love this movie. It was odd that you and I had not seen it. I go to a lot of conventions, and I went to one recently with a friend, and an artist had Last Unicorn artwork, and my friend was very excited and was like, oh, no one ever has Last Unicorn artwork. Oh my gosh. And she freaked out and she like had to buy it, but they had like several different things and she couldn't decide what she wanted. And the whole time I was like trying to be supportive and be excited for her, but I was like, I've never seen the Last Unicorn. I don't know what any of this is.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I think a way that this hit me was because this was super funny. I thought Schmindrick was hilarious, like beyond like a kid's movie hilarious. Like, he would say stuff like, he made some joke about like a tax write off or something, just like in the way that like a modern day comedian who gets like a voiceover role in a movie or something would do. But like, I felt like it was delivered like just a little bit better than in that. I don't know. I was schmitten with this. Schmitten with Schmindrick.
Schmindin. Yeah. I think it's funny that you say that, cause I have like the wiki page open so I could remember the names. And there's a note in the cast list that Beagle, who wrote the novel and the screenplay, commented that he was a bit disappointed by the way Alan Arkin approached the character because it seemed too flat.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of Beagle, so are you, I don't know, are you familiar kind of with that author at all? I guess not. I mean,
Nope. I've never heard of him that I know of. Like, I don't recognize the name.
So my introduction to this movie was through the comedy band Ninja Sex Party. They their singer Dan Avidan is a big fan of this animated movie, and he brought it to his audience's attention that Peter S. Beagle he's a elder gentleman at this point. He's in his 80s. He wrote The Last Unicorn back in 68, and it's his, you know, most acclaimed novel that he has written, although he's had a lot of, you know, other work, again working on those animated Lord of the Rings movies. However, he, by the start of the 2000s, was not doing very well financially. He had gone through a pretty messy divorce, and so he hired a new manager who shortly after started a new production or a new publication company in order to like help garner revenue and everything. And that went on for about 15 years. But then in 2015, a lawsuit was actually brought forward from Beagle to his manager. And it turns out basically he hasn't really been receiving the proper funds and like money that he deserves for any of this work.
His royalties?
His royalties, or much of anything, is what a lot of the lawsuit had alleged. And apparently it was also a lot of cases of like elder abuse and things against him. The one instance in particular, he was doing a very, very like tedious and exhausting publicity like tour, and it was to the extent where like over a stretch of time he only had like a window of like 35 hours off, and he ended up because of his age and health having to cut that tour short, and because of that his manager made him sign 5,000 apology letters to the individuals.
What?
Which is like tough for anybody, but also, you know, somebody who's 70 or 80 and has been writing, and not kind. That actually ended up wrapping up. It was a 5-year lawsuit, which is very, very sad. That's a long time for anybody. Ended up 4 of the 6 properties went back to Beagle, including The Last Unicorn. So he did get his rights back to that. So that's good.
Yeah.
And But I think that's kind of interesting. And like, I don't know, it's happy. I'm kind of happy now to get to watch it because I don't know, get to know that that goes to Beagle and not his manager or anything.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just thought that was kind of interesting and it makes me happy and sad at the same time, but
yeah. Sad that it happened, happy that it's over.
Yes. It is a, I don't know. It's such, I like you said, I am surprised we never got to watch this. Like, I think it's because I probably did, like, down age it in my mind. You know what I mean? Like, I think I maybe thought it was too young for me. Like, it was too much of a kiddie movie growing up.
Yeah, I basically watched what my parents wanted me to watch when I was younger. Not at all in, like, a restrictive way. Like, a lot of kids that I'm like, oh, my parents only let me watch VeggieTales. Or whatever, but my parents are cinephiles, so they're very like, oh, you have to watch this. Like, I never ran out of something to watch, because my parents always, like, rented movies and everything, and they were like, oh, you have to watch, like, all the movies we liked as kids, like, all that. And I'm really surprised that The Last Unicorn was never on either of their lists for me to watch. And I don't know if maybe because it wasn't, like, a big production company movie. Like, it wasn't Disney, it wasn't Nickelodeon, wasn't, you know, Studio Ghibli. Like, I don't know. I don't know why it was not on their list. Because I feel like, I mean, they, I don't know. Maybe they were a little too old when it came out.
Yeah.
To not appreciate it.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know. It did seem to kind of, I don't think it was a massive success at the time, at least. I was trying to see here. Yeah, it looks like it was okay. I mean, yeah, the budget for
it made it pretty decent.
Worldwide gross. Looks like it almost doubled what it cost to make. So, yeah, it did. Opening weekend. Goodness gracious. Yeah. Oh, this came out on my birthday minus
some years.
12 years. Yeah. yeah, so I don't know. I really don't know. I think maybe just too. I don't know. I really wish I could know why it was less popular.
What is interesting to me about, because I know I talked about, like, how some of the animation was really good and some of it was really pretty, like, especially, like, we were talking about that unicorn scene. I was thinking, oh, that feels very, like, Studio Ghibli to me, like, specifically, like, Ponyo, when all the Ponyos are going through the waves. Like, it was kind of similar to that. So I looked kind of into the production of this, and so the animation was done at Topcraft in Tokyo, Japan. Mm. And that was headed by a former toy animation employee. Mm. With Masaki Iizuka being in charge of production. Like you said, you know, they're the studio that previously did, like, The Hobbit, the Frosty's Winter Neverland, blah blah blah. but the Cell animation, they would later go on to join Studio Ghibli.
Oh, nice.
So there is, like, a connection to that, because they were later hired by Miyazaki.
Yeah. I should say too, because I said I was kind of lauding the animation. It is definitely dated. I mean, like, it does not hold up to modern standards, and it just has that. I think too, like, that animated Hobbit kind of holds a special place in my heart. So, like, it is its own kind of thing, though.
I think that some of it is done kind of on purpose, just with, like, who these characters are, because it's like, oh, the last unicorn, like, really mythical and beautiful, and then her human form, of course, has to also be mythical and beautiful, and then you have these other people. And so they're kind of not animated as well, or have very kind of not beautiful traditionally features. Their proportions are kind of weird for, like, you know, no actual human would have that proportion. And I think it, you know, it's kind of done on purpose to contrast the unicorn and make her even more beautiful and ethereal looking,
right,
compared to everyone around her.
It's it reminds me a lot of, there is a movie that is very much not like this movie, called The Belladonna of Sadness, which is a Japanese animated movie that came out in 73. Unlike The Last Unicorn, Belladonna of Sadness is super not for children, but it is a very, very beautiful animation. So I was trying to check and see, and I can't confirm or deny that there was any relation between those two companies or those that worked on that. But it is, yeah, having that kind of mythical, like, otherworldly style to kind of transport the viewer that way through just almost like intentionally vague at times imagery to not place you too hard in any kind of given reality. It's very impressive.
That's a great way to put that.
Also, you mentioned Jeffrey Bridges singing in this, and that was outstanding. Also, the rest of the music is done by America, the band.
Yeah, like the theme song, like the opening song before we even meet anybody is by America.
And I think all the, like, the transitioning music when they're traveling is done by America too, which is some of the most, like, 80s stuff. Like,
yeah, that movie is pretty 80s, huh? Like,
and it rips. It's like, I think it's great. It's definitely of that time, but it's like, I don't know. I was just happy every time I heard, like, America kick in. It was just this, like, kind of folksy 80s band that, like, we're traveling on the roads and, like.
And so I'm looking at it just to confirm. So the songs were composed and arranged by Jimmy Webb, but they were performed by America and the London Symphony Orchestra.
Dang.
With some additional vocals provided by Lucy Mitchell.
Goodness gracious. It's just, it is all over the place with talent and...
just a little, like, little thread for us. If you didn't know, Jimmy Webb was born in Oklahoma.
I was just looking at that. I don't know Jimmy Webb.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know that name either, but I also feel like I kind of do.
Right.
So I was looking at him. He's done a lot, and he's worked with a lot of really cool people like Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash. Like, yeah.
Yeah, but born in Elk City.
Elk City, Oklahoma.
All right. Population 12,000. Anyway.
That's where we met, so.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Elk City podcast. Small town America. This is definitely a 2D film. Lots of farts in it. No, it was...
there weren't any farts. You know what? There were a lot of boobies.
There were a lot of boobies.
So I'll just, a fair warning, if you don't know what, you know, some renditions of mythical harpies are, it's like a big giant bird with breasts, with like three of them.
Yes.
Three just hangy breasticles. And then there's a very odd scene.
I'll let you describe the tree. I mean, is that?
Yes.
When you saw the tree, were you like, that looks like a butt, like before it turned into?
No, I wasn't. I didn't notice at all, but I almost checked out of the movie at this point.
Oh, no.
I'm glad I stuck in there, but this scene was just very, very ridiculous. So we didn't really go into like how they met Molly. Shmendrick and the Last Unicorn come upon some like bandits in the woods, and he's like, oh, run away, I'll distract them. And they end up kidnapping Shmendrick and bringing them back to their leader, who Molly is like married to or dating, or I don't know. And he's like, oh, like, you're a magician, you know, you can be our friend, like, come stay for dinner or whatever. And, you know, it turns out kind of okay. And then they're talking about Robin Hood, and the main guy is like, Robin Hood's not real. I'm a real bandit. I'm a real cool guy. So Shmendrick creates an illusion of Robin Hood and Marianne and his, you know, merry men to walk through the forest. So all of his gang and his Molly chase after them and leave him. So he's so mad. So he ties Shmendrick to a tree, like face first.
Yeah,
and they're like, oh, we're going to leave you here, and in the morning, we're going to beat you up or something. Like, it was very, like, their logic was very weird of why they weren't just, like, taking care of the problem now. Yeah. But, you know, that evil villain thing.
I think they wanted to sell him. That was, like, something that was, like, repeated several times. They're like, we could probably get a good, like.
Oh, yeah, they're going to, like, slave trade him.
Something like that. Yeah. Anyway, continue on with good moral values of the movie.
Yeah, you know. So they tie him to the tree, and they're like, okay, see you in the morning, chump. And so Schmendrick's like, oh, I'm a magician. I'll do some magic and, you know, try to get out of this. And if you haven't, like, caught on, Schmendrick doesn't have complete control over his magic. Sometimes it works for him, sometimes it doesn't. So I don't know what he was trying to accomplish, but he accidentally makes this tree sentient, and there's some bulbous areas of the tree that very quickly turn into a bosom that he is just face first in between, and the tree has decided she's in love with Schmendrick, and they're going to die together there. And when the last unicorn comes to free him, she's like, you're not going off. I think she calls the unicorn a hussy.
Yes.
Like, she's like, you're not going off with that hussy. And she, like, tries to attack, like, kill both of them. Like, the tree tries to kill herself with Schmendrick so that they can die together. But luckily, the last unicorn uses her magic horn to untie him and turn the tree back to a normal, not horny tree.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why I was so endeared to stuff like that, because it just felt so, like, it felt like in writing this, it was largely like, yeah, and then what happens? And then the tree comes to life. Like, okay. And then, like, it was, reflecting on it now, talking with you, it's not always the best choices for varied reasons, but
it does, like, keep up this, like, mythical magical world for sure. I did, when I was watching this, I thought a lot about Alice in Wonderland. I know that you've recently read or are reading the novel. I would imagine that the novelization of this movie is pretty similar to that, where, like, it's a really good story, but sometimes it just, like, something starts happening and you're like, wait, what? Why? And you have to, like, start your page over because you're like, we were just doing this other thing. Why is this thing happening? It's very just these little, like, vignettes of story that have kind of nothing to do with anything else. But it keeps you in this fantastical world by throwing those in there.
No, yeah, I finished both of those. And yeah, I could very much agree that it's one thing after the other. I'd be curious to pick up The Last Unicorn, the book of it.
I'm probably going to put it on my list because I'd be very curious to see what the original texts look like.
And I mean, some of it's dated, but it is for kids, right? Like, we could say that.
Yeah, it's for kids. Just, again, there's some animated kind of boobs. So there's your warning.
We forgot to do this up top. What else have you been watching recently?
Well, I'm having this weird phenomenon happen in my life where I watch a movie and then I randomly decide to watch another movie and an actor from the last movie I watched was in it. So that's been fun. But I recently watched Hell or High Water, which
that was recent, right?
Yeah, it's more of a recent one. It has, I think, a Hemsworth brother in it.
Chris Pine.
Oh, Chris Pine. Yeah, I get him confused with Chris Hemsworth because they all look the same. All the Chrises look the same. And then the other brother in this movie, Ben Foster, and Jeff Bridges. Yes. So we watched this movie and it was really good. It's about two brothers that are trying to run a plot to get more money to save the farm. You know how it goes. You gotta save the farm. Very, very good. I then watched the remake of 310 to Yuma, which I said that weird, Yuma, which also had Ben Foster in it as Charles Prince, which was the number two to Ben Wade, which was the number one bad guy in the movie. And I was like, wow, watch two movies in a row and both have Ben Foster in it. That's wild. Very good. Have not seen the original 310 to Yuma. Very good. The remake was really good. I couldn't tell you if it was better than the first one or not. But it was very good. And then I watched The Last Unicorn and it had Jeff Bridges in it. I was like, what the heck?
Kind of sounds like you're a bit on like a Western kick. Is that?
Yeah. My partner's on a Western kick. He wanted to watch Hell or High Water and it was really good. Like, I'm in no way complaining. But that kind of put him on a Western kick. So when it came time for another movie, I was like, oh, like, you know, I think we went out of our way to do something I wanted to do. So I was like, oh, like, you know, we'll watch whatever movie you want to watch. And he's like, oh, I want to watch 310 to Yuma, even though it's 2.5 hours. And I was like, okay, let's do it. It was really good.
Western is one of those, it's like the only genre I feel like that I almost never want to watch it. But it's hardly ever bad. Like, I hardly ever walk away from, and one of my favorite movies of all time, is the There Will Be Blood. And yeah. I consider that a Western. So like,
no, I do too.
It's a genre that is just, I don't know. It hardly ever sounds appealing, but then once you're there, you're like, aye, that's pretty good.
You're like, oh yeah, this is really good. But you're never like, oh, you know what I want to watch? Western.
Yeah, I'm never like, let's do this dang thing. That's not a Western voice.
Yeehaw.
I think what it is like, I have seen some not great Westerns, and a not good Western gets me real riled up
because they're
long.
There's some rough ones out there.
Yeah, they're long, and you're like, what is even the point?
Yeah, a lot of the times you're like, I don't even know what's happening.
Yeah, everybody's staring at each other, and they're
shooting.
It takes them a long time, but they eventually shoot. Then I don't know who dies. I remember watching the original 310 to Yuma, and no, I didn't. I watched Tombstones. That's what I was thinking of.
Tombstones, also one that's, I was like, I don't really care, and then I watched it, and I was like, this is really good.
It's real, real good.
I loved Tombstone.
Very good. I have not, that is one of those movies where I'm like, that is, it's one of the longest, like, I have not rewatched it since I was maybe like 8 or 9. Like, so I,
yeah,
like almost no memory of it.
But yeah, so I've watched those. I saw Last Unicorn. I'm watching a Chinese drama called Somewhere Only We Know. It's really good. I like it. I'm not done with it, but I like it a lot. And recently got access to our dear friend's Hulu account. So I've been watching Bob's Burgers because that's the only place that has Bob's Burgers now. So
nice.
I love Bob's Burgers.
It's good. I have not. It's one of those that I enjoyed. I think I watched like the first 3 seasons and loved it. I just never returned. It's very good though.
Yeah, it's great. What have you been watching, Brandon?
Well, recently, Don and I went to the movie theaters here in Bangkok and watched a film called Jaifu Story, also alternatively titled Happy Ending. It was very good. It was a very sweet, funny comedy. This is the second, Thai movie that Don and I have seen in theaters here. And, this one was like a romantic comedy that followed. It was 4 stories with like, okay, with like the main story is about this this writer who's writing screenplays, and he's at the hospital where his mom is currently at, and he meets this girl and she wants to read the stories he's writing. So there are 4 like vignettes that are these stories that he's writing, which are all love stories. And it was very, very cute, very fun, very silly. The stories were like, they all ranged from different, I don't know, it felt very, very Thai. And also some of them had like COVID elements to them, but was not like over the top, which is like a really interesting thing to watch in the last couple of years. Like movies kind of struggle with that. But like the first story is like this guy bets his friend that he can be in quarantine for 2 weeks. Like he has no problem doing that. And then there's a girl in the apartment building like across from him who she has to quarantine for 2 weeks. And, you know, they end up falling in love. And it's like, you know, they're doing all the, like, I'm sure you've like probably seen a short or something or like a viral video where like, you know, he like sends his drone over there and they have a date across the thing. Basically, that was what it was, the short film version of that.
I like it.
But the stories got better as they went on and it was cute and fun. The other thing I would want to talk about was the movie that Don and I ended up watching for the Okie Okie show last month. Was very, very good. It is a film that came out last year called Belle. If you
haven't. Oh, I've seen the artwork. It looks amazing.
Highly, highly recommend it. It's on HBO Max. It's very good, very fun. If you don't know anything about it, if I would just jump into it, it, you cannot watch the on HBO Max. I don't know why they did this, but there there's not the Japanese dubbed. There's only the English version. But it's well casted. It has some of the best songs in a movie I've seen in a long time. They slap. They are catchy. Okay. They are fun. They're poppy. And so initially I only heard the English version of those songs and then went and listened to the Japanese version later. And they're both really, really good. And it's really impressive that they were able to translate the songs both ways.
Oh, yeah, that is impressive. That's hard to do.
Yeah. It's really good. Highly, highly recommend Belle. Other than that, I mean, I've been watching same old stuff. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Still Critical Role every week. That's a thing. The only other thing I keep up with, but
I'm like over halfway through campaign two. Nice. I'm on episode 69.
Nice. Nice. Well, if you let me, I would talk forever about that, but
that's not this podcast.
It's not this podcast. As much as apparently I try to make it be is a Critical Role fan cast. Do you want to tell people where they can find us?
Do you want to first talk about our movie for next month?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Next month, we're watching Lou Over the Wall.
That's correct.
Go ahead.
It was on, I don't remember where I saw it, but it looked, the art's very cute. It looks like it has a mermaid on it. I like mermaids. September is my birthday month, so we're watching a mermaid movie for my birthday month. That was just Lou Over the Wall.
That was all I remembered. I thought this was the old version of The Little Mermaid. So now that I'm looking at it, it is not that.
No, I really want to watch that because it's the same animation studio that does the Swan Princess that we watched. Mm. But you have to buy the DVD. Like you can't. Gotcha. You have to like buy the DVD from Amazon.
Yeah, 2017 Lou Over the Wall. This looks dope. I'm excited.
So, and with that being said, if you want to say something about The Last Unicorn or you want to like put your thoughts in about Lou Over the Wall next month, you can tweet us, you can Instagram DM us, you can send us an email at 2D or not 2D cast. On all of those, except for email, you have to put an at Gmail. And other than that, it's all the same. You can also get onto anchor.fm, which hosts our podcast, and send us a voice memo. And we can just plop your little voice right next to our little voices, and we can have a little voice party and talk about what you want to talk about. Yep, that's it.
Yeah. Well, we will be back next month, September 25th.
We promise.
We promise. We promise. Unless they pull Lou Over the Wall everywhere, and then maybe we'll just hop on a thing and talk about something else animated.
Yeah. Well, if this happens again, we'll make a filler episode, but we were just really busy at the time that this happened, so we didn't have time to navigate that.
Yes. Well, I'm going to go hop on a plane and fly to the other side of the planet. And I don't know, I might give you a high five or something, Nick. I don't know, are you busy in the next, you know,
month? I can move some things around.
Okay, cool. Maybe I'll swing by.
Okay.
Well, with that out of the way, thank you everybody for listening. My name's Brandon.
My name's Nikki.
And be sure to
tune in next time.